Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You're tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and here with our favorite gardener, Lance Swaggart. Good evening, Lance.
Good evening.
And Lulu is off tonight, but we've got our favorite and fellow worm, Amber Kleinman, joining us. Hello, Amber.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Fresh off the flood, right in here.
Yeah, fresh off the flood.
All right, we've got some good stories to tell and some good emails tonight to talk about. And we're going to start with that and respond to these listener questions. And I'm going to give you the phone numbers because Jeff is in there to take your calls because a lot going on, a lot of weather, a lot of excitement, a lot of tears, jeers, all kinds of stuff. So 970-527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF now. And we had a couple people email us at worm@kvnf.org. So let's start with a question from Tara, who's a regular listener. And her question is about hugel culture.
Yeah. Is that something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say that for me, would you, Lance?
No, I'm not.
We know what it means, but we don't know how to pronounce it.
So it's German hill culture, mound culture, and Tara and her husband are chopping down a big old cottonwood tree. So they want to know about that system of composting logs, branches, other woody material, and covering the whole lot with a thin layer of soil to create a mound, which can be planted up as a form of mounded raised garden bed. Is that successful in this dry climate? What about watering? Thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I've seen it here and there. I don't know that much about it. I think in about 3 years it would be really good. But it takes a long time because you got Germany where it came from. That's a very moist climate to us, high and dry. Uh-huh. So it's going to take a little bit longer for that stuff to break down. But I do know people. In fact, a neighbor's doing it, planting his trees, and he's hardly watering those trees.
All right.
He planted them 2 years ago.
Does it work as a mulchy kind of
thing? No, it's in the ground. You bury it, and it's a water storage.
Oh, okay.
Is what it is. It stores all that ground, and it slowly breaks down. And I don't know the maintenance of it if you just continue to mulch afterwards on top.
Mm-hmm.
But it will work. I've seen it out on the desert, you know, where Payne Siding goes up, up under Redlands.
Wow.
And those mounds were so high that there was no way that you were going to keep them moist.
And so this concept.
You don't want them that high. In our, in our high, dry area, you don't want really high mounds.
Okay.
No, because they're just going to dry out no matter what you've done to them.
Okay, so not necessarily going to work in a climate like that or that dryish.
It's dry. You just need it a little bit lower. And you might put a windbreak up.
Okay.
You know.
But there's other things that we hill, like asparagus and potatoes and certain perennial flowers. Or what's the advantage of hilling in general?
Well, potatoes, it's to keep them green, from getting green.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm. And it stays a little bit drier if you kind of lift out of the ground a little bit. So you, like, you know, peppers, tomatoes, things like it drier. If you make the hill a little higher, they won't be as moist all the time because they're kind of out of the wet layer of the soil.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those peppers are rather sensitive.
Oh, yeah.
Because you try to, if you're not hilling them, you're watering them, but they really like it hot. But there's just this fine line there.
Yeah. Yeah. They're touchy.
They're touchy. And I've heard people that do really good with peppers, they have a shade cloth over them.
Oh, okay.
Because they can easily get sunburned.
True.
At I'm this seeing elevation, that. Yeah.
At this elevation, they get sunburned. But just the real high mounds, I see them in landscaping, and I just shake my head because I know it's going to be so hard to keep those plants moist.
Right.
You know, maybe a 2 foot nice rounded mound, but no more than that.
Okay.
Yeah. But it will work here. Just be patient, and it's a lot of work.
Okay, a lot of work to mound.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, Tara, for always listening and your questions. And I'm going to give the phone numbers, and then we've got another email here, but 527-4868-1866-KVNF now. This one is about squash bugs from Elizabeth down in Delta. We had the duct tape concept last week of just like
Yep.
Wrapping your fingers up, in.
Smushing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Sounds really fun to me. But Elizabeth wants to know, possible to control squash bugs on a squash or cucumber plant, and what about the diatomaceous earth to slow them down?
Well, so I think it was on this show that we talked about the 1 to 10 molasses mix.
Oh,
remember
okay.
that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember how it actually does work, if it actually just gums them up. But I think it's one part molasses to 10 parts water sprayed on the plants. Either keeps them off, or they get sick, or they don't like it.
Yeah,
or do you remember what the factor is?
No, yeah. I don't. What it is any of those things will work if you want to repel them. There's a 10 drops essential oil or sage or thyme in a gallon of water, and that's just
repellent.
A repellent. That doesn't kill them; it
mm-hmm.
repels them.
Okay.
And you can do that at diatomaceous earth will slow them down, but I don't know if it's going to kill the eggs.
No, okay. I don't think it will at all.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
and the eggs, I was at a friend's house last week, and the eggs were on the bottom of the leaves, but they also are sneaky mm-hmm. and lay them on the stems. In a
sometimes, dribble them along.
Yes.
Yeah, places you don't look.
Right. If you don't look. So I pointed it out. So it's not just underneath the leaves. It's actually on the stems, too.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those that you have to just comb through your plants. Like, mm-hmm. I regularly will comb through and turn over leaves because they typically will show up in the nook of the leaf down where it attaches to the stem. They want to lay in that little triangle nook.
Sure.
Yep.
And so, you know, you just got to look through, smash them, look for the bit. Like if you scratch around the base of the plant in the soil where it goes in, you know, they kind of hang out there. So if you scratch around, they might come up because you disturb them.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I find you just got to get out there and look at them every day and mm-hmm. smash every single one and smash every single egg and just keep doing it.
Yeah. So when you're weeding by hand, that's one of those things you want
to. You have to be relentless.
Mm-hmm. Relentless.
Relentless.
Persistence. And I've gotten to the point where I know where my squash row is going to be. And in April, I plant nasturtiums.
Mm. As a deterrent.
Because mm-hmm. the squash bugs don't like nasturtiums. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those nasturtium plants are actually just now starting to get overrun by the squash, just now. And
wow.
And I've only found one squash bug in there.
Wow.
That's good. And all that whole patch.
That's a great thing.
Yeah.
So plan ahead.
Squash bugs will choose. There's three varieties of squash we grow. We got mm-hmm. pepos, which are summer squash, and delicatas and acorns, and most pumpkins, and spaghetti squash. Those are pepos. Then you have the moschatas, which are buttercups and hokkaidas and marigolds and kabochas. And then you have the moschata, which is the butternuts and Long Island cheese. There's some other ones in there that are they probably won't even touch the butternuts and the moschatas.
Hmm.
They won't.
They
really won't even touch those guys. What they really want is the maximus. And the second choice is the pepos.
Okay, so thinking about what you actually have out there.
And then they will go to cucumbers and maybe melons.
Oh, wow. I've never had them cross over before.
No, that's in desperation. They will do that because it's all the same family.
Right, and that sounds what Elizabeth has going on is some squash bugs on cucumber plants.
Yeah,
so.
That's what she said.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Amber, if you've got this part of molasses water combo, you're spraying all of those points where you're actually looking for the squash bugs then,
saturating the plant area, mm-hmm. you know, underneath, on top. And I think it helps to hit them. I think that it's a contact. It works by contact. I think that you have mm-hmm. to really saturate the plants with it. And
sure.
the plants like it. I mean, it mm-hmm. does cause a burst of, like, biological activity, though, because you're now feeding the biology in the soil sugar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So there's kind of this explosion of
yummy.
Yeah, so that can be good or bad, but yeah.
If you really have a slow-moving compost pile, put some molasses mixed with water in it.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Really?
And if, and if you let that molasses ferment a little bit and then put it in there.
It'll really go to town.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good to know. All right, 527-4868. 1-866-KVNF now or worm at kvnf.org. And we've been praying for the rain.
Yes, we have.
And our prayers were sort of kind of answered. Amber has a great garden here in Paonia. And you've got a little bit of a deluge, Louisiana Bayou going on over there. What happened?
Well, it wasn't the rain. I mean, you know, I don't know how other people got it, but it started out with a little bit of hail, actually, which was very worrisome.
Yeah.
And then it just came and it was just, you know, of course, dumping rain. But then about, and like maybe 30 minutes afterwards, we got a rush of water down Minnesota Creek.
Oh, that late. And so, afterwards.
Yeah, wow. Everyone on Minnesota Creek could hear it happening before they saw it because the sound of the trees that were bashing and cracking into each other in Minnesota Creek was loud.
Wow.
Yeah, which is, if you don't live here, it's not a big creek.
Right.
No,
it's not big.
10 feet across, typically.
Yeah.
Not a big creek, but it is a drainage for, I'm not sure how much terrain out there, but obviously more than, it was a lot. And a lot of that rain fell all at once, and it came down in Minnesota. And then what it does is it rushed down, and it took out a couple of, I think, beaver dams in the process.
That's what I heard.
And then
so
it
all
flooded
kinds of debris.
All the way up to, like, Fresh and Wild, like, even outside of town, that Minnesota Creek was super wide. And so it hits at, you know, if you've been to Apple Valley Park recently, you'll notice that it takes over the park and expands out with a lot of water. But the bigger problem is it's carrying a load of silt with it.
Right.
So the water rushes away and leaves like 4 and 5 inches of mud, which is going to kill all the grass and everything else under it, and which is my entire yard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is probably like, what, a 40-year?
No, this happened in 2012.
Oh, no kidding.
And before, it happened in 1995, my neighbor says.
So drought-related, really.
Well,
it's
flash
flood.
Flash flood, and it's been so dry that the silt was a bigger issue because it just carried all that dry silt down with it right into the
exactly.
water.
No soaking in, just like take everything with it and go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hate to be talking about, too much water in the middle of a drought, but you can't, you can get floods in a drought, and, you know, that water is not... it's not timed well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about how do you mediate that problem and what have you been doing? What have you been able to salvage out of your garden?
So the first thing I did was kind of spray down the plants that looked like they were still alive and then pull them up out of the muck, spray them off, and kind of cut a little circle around them through the mud to the ground so that they could get some... you know, some moisture and air out a little bit, and try to just scrape the mud off the surface and, you know, spray off the plants and give them a little, I've been spraying with seaweed, the ones that are above the ground. Yeah. Spray with kelp because all the bacteria and fungus that they're exposed to with the silt, it helps them kind of combat all of this.
Yeah. Giving them some nutrition and some stuff to get through.
And so this could happen, like if you have a irrigation that, you know, kind of sets loose and you suddenly get a rush of water into your garden, this could be something that anyone deals with. It doesn't have to be a flood.
But exactly.
If you get a lot of silt around your plants, you know, pry them up, wash them off, scoop the mud away from them, and let it dry. And
let
don't
it dry.
Mess with them.
Right.
Until you can see the damage.
We're going to get back to that in just a second, but we've got Kim from Ridgeway on the line. Hello, Kim.
Hi.
What do you have going on tonight?
Well, my thing is I'm going to go out to your area probably the weekend of the 24th, but I'm looking for property where I can grow things. I've been living up at 9,000 feet forever, and I'm from California, and I want to grow a tomato, and I want to have my horses where I can ride them. So I'm looking towards the Paonia. Can somebody give me a name of a mesa or something I should check out? The lighter the winter, the better.
Well, we didn't have winter last year, so that was pretty light.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would point at a mesa, though. Would Would you point at a mesa first?
Well, let's talk about the weather, Lance, for you, because you got what compared to us down here in Hanna? You're up on Luray Creek.
Rain.
A little bit of rain.
And I had some hail mixed in. Mm-hmm. And what the real problem was the wind.
The wind, okay.
The wind knocked, I ended up picking up 2 5-gallon buckets of fruit off the ground.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But anyways, I mean, there's all the different mesas, and you're going to have to look at how much irrigation water they have.
First priority.
And then you need to look at their face, which way are they facing?
Windward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. South, east, west, what do you want? There's Sunshine Mesa, there's Lambourne Mesa, there's Stucker Mesa.
Peach Valley.
Peach Valley,
don't say. No, the Redlands Mesa. But, you know, Redlands Mesa is wide open to the south and the west, and so you get great solar exposure during the wintertime, but you also get wind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, which one's less windy?
You know, well, I think we've talked about just the absolute microclimates around here,
truly.
How it can be just up the road from you, have a whole different weather experience than, you know, half a mile down where you are kind of thing. So it's...
They all have their things.
They do.
But.
And there's a lot of the mesas are super rocky. A lot of the land around here has a lot of rocks in it. And so if it's land that's raw and it hasn't been cultivated before, you've got a lot of work to do to get it into a state where you could grow a real nice tomato. So I would, you know, if you fall in love with a place, I would get a soil sample, and check that out.
Yeah.
Make sure what you have is good soil. Yeah.
Everything has some wind at some point.
And that's not a problem.
No, there's always some winds one way or the other. There's the main thing is the face of what your southern exposure, northern exposure, and how much irrigation water it has with it.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of nooks and crannies that just are incredible. I live on the Roo Creek Road, and I have no wind to speak of. And I'm a half mile from Redlands Mesa.
Yeah, and I'm down in a valley, in town, and we hear the wind a lot more than we actually experience it because it goes above us.
Right. But then also just down town here, going towards Crawford, people experienced wind a couple other days they actually had to go and hold their fences so that the fences didn't,
we did get that wind.
Yeah,
I remember
so
that.
Some crazy microclimates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're just going to have to do some homework.
Okay, will do.
Yeah.
Talk to your neighbor. I mean, if you love a place, talk to the people around there, and they can tell you how the soil is and how the water is and when you get cut off and all that stuff. You know, that's pretty important to know.
Mm-hmm. And make sure that the water comes with the property.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because they're two separate properties.
Yeah.
Or commodities. So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your input.
Okay.
Thanks,
totally
Kim.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. 527-4868-1866 KVNF. Now, Lance, you mentioned earlier that the wind with the storm on Sunday fell a lot of fruit for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, knocked a lot of fruit. And there's still some. Well, Saturday evening it did that. There's more Sunday, and I just didn't want to go and look at it.
I just can't bring yourself to look at it.
I know it's there because I'm walking over it. It's, you know, but I look up in the tree and I said, there's still fruit up there. But I bet you my Santa Rosa plum and that one wind lost half its fruit.
Wow.
Yeah.
But did you have that to spare? I mean, lot of these trees are loaded. No, you probably had.
You're pretty good at pruning or at picking.
The pears, they lost quite a bit, but there's still quite a bit up there. You know that.
Darn.
You know, that yellow plum lost a little bit, but it's fine.
You have to send it in the chickens.
Well, the squirrel decided that it was time to come check out my apricots.
Oh, dear.
So it went for a ride this morning.
Trapped, huh?
There's two ways, two different places that they come in, and I just put it out there.
Well, you're good with those squirrels.
And I dropped them off
at the resort.
I put cayenne pepper on the branches that it was crawling up.
Oh,
so it'll burn its eyes, its hands.
Ooh.
Yeah, just, and in the process, it sort of blew into my hand. Oh, I got a little close there.
That's why your eyes are watering tonight.
Yes.
Okay. So what about the hail, Amber? Was your damage mostly from this deluge of water?
Yeah, it was the mud by far. But we've had some really bad hailstorms in July before, and it just, you know, it just looks like somebody shot all the plants. and they don't ever really recover from that. A lot of them just get torn up and they just look,
Bad shabby
the rest of the year until you harvest them. It's hail, there's nothing much you can do except run out with some tarps or something and try to.
Right.
Yeah.
You never know it's coming, though.
Yeah, if you know it's coming, then you can throw out some things. But
no, I don't have that. I've had 1 year I had real bad hail twice in 1 week. And that's the only time I had that kind of hail. I've had some, but for some reason, I'm far enough from the higher mountains that it doesn't back up and hit me.
Right, nice.
You know, so it's there, and it messes things up. And I had it shred the carrot leaves. We had of course, the squash
decimated. Terrible.
You know, and it's everything. I've seen fruit trees totally denuded of leaves.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
You know, right up here off of 133. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Goodness. Well, yeah, it's been crazy weather, and let's hope it calms down a little. And
we just get some simple light rain and not like
some
these mad, angry storms coming through.
Yeah, quite a bit of energy for sure.
Yeah.
What about people that had planter pots out there where they maybe planted flowers or something and it didn't drain quite well? And you mentioned, Amber, in your garden to kind of get that muck out of there and clean the plants off. Same thing in a little planter box?
The stuff that was up a foot or more off the ground was okay because the water didn't get that high. So, the stuff in planters is fine because, well, it has a drainage problem now because it's encased in mud, but they're still, you know, they're moist. That hasn't been my first priority. So,
sure, yeah.
They seem to be okay for now.
You've been shoveling. Probably.
Yeah.
Shoveling concrete.
Yeah.
Wet concrete.
Oh, yeah.
And those pots will drain.
Those air, smart pots will.
Yeah.
Pretty good like that.
All right. And it looks like maybe some more rain and coolness on the horizon.
Yeah.
So that'd be nice if it was mellow.
That would be nice.
Sweet. Okay. 527-4868 1-866 KVNF. Now, Lance, you can still plant some things. You're still planting.
I'm still planting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, today I planted some more basil.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. More basil at this point, huh? Yeah. They're not going to get too tall at this point, are they? Or
we'll find out.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have so many blankets and tarps.
But basil is so touchy. Like if it gets the slightest bit cold, it turns black. That's why I'm like, I'm so impressed.
Yeah. No, I'll cover them.
You cover it. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Gotta work for that basil.
Yeah. Right. And then, all those greens, you can still plant plenty of greens. Mm-hmm. I still got a month of planting greens every couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Like your arugula and your lettuce.
Well, I'm not planting arugula.
Oh, right. You don't plant arugula. I'm sorry. Excuse him.
He's offended.
Arugula.
No. But I just planted some kale on Friday with some radicchio and some daikons, and they came up this morning.
Oh, wow. No kidding. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, you can do those things. I think you can still get away with some bush beans or maybe some zucchini or that kind of stuff. But it's mainly greens, radishes and beets, kohlrabi. No, in another 2 weeks, it might be a little late for kohlrabi because it takes so long to start making its beds or bulbs. But beets, I'll even plant beets the first week of August.
Oh, wow.
And daikons, I'll plant the first week of August.
And these are food crop, not seed crop.
These are food crops.
Food crop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Amber? Are you going to plant some stuff here, or are you just
mode? Yeah.
See what happens.
I'm just going to see what lives this far. But I would have to just shovel off a bunch of mud off the top of the garden bed before I could plant it. So, I don't know at this point what's going to happen in the fall. But normally, yes, I would keep planting, especially greens and things you can go into the winter late with. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people don't plant in or realize you plant in July and you can take things into that shoulder season into like November around
right.
here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we don't get steady drops of snow until like December at the
yeah.
earliest.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of seasons still left for cold crops mm-hmm. that if you start in July, you can mm-hmm. get them to finish.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're still in the game right now.
Yeah.
Right. I love that.
And
it's exciting.
To me, it's still too hot for spinach, but that mm-hmm. first week of August.
You're going to plant
spinach.
Plant
spinach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because it likes that cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tasty cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. How about a call from someone listening out there?
Five. Oh, I was going to ask about, the garlic looks pretty darn ready at this point.
Uh-huh.
Are you pulling up garlic at your place?
All my garlic's harvested.
Already
all
harvested?
Of it.
Except
mm-hmm.
for the spring garlic, which is going to be tomorrow or by this weekend.
Oh,
wow.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It started to look ready kind of the first week of July. And
You had that cold air drainage.
Yeah, that's true. It's colder where I am than
yeah.
where mm-hmm. you
mm-hmm.
are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you pull it out?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago?
Actually, one variety 2 weeks ago and the other one last weekend.
Huh. So beginning of July. Is that a little early?
That's 2 weeks early.
Okay, yeah. I thought so, yeah.
2 to 3 weeks. It really should
kinda
be harvesting now.
I think mid-July, now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm on time. What are you talking
yeah,
about?
Right.
Yeah.
You're on time. Mine was early.
Early.
Yeah,
yeah.
No
huh.
kidding.
Huh.
And so is that something you're going to be able to
pull?
Salvage?
Yeah, I think
oh,
so.
Awesome.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They don't mind too badly.
No, they'll be fine.
Being a root, you know, and they can kind of deal with extra soil on top
uh-huh.
for a while.
Right. That underground stuff. Yeah, it's more your greens. And
yeah.
I'm just thinking of all that raccoon protection and everything
oh,
you put out there, all that
I
work.
I don't want to talk about it.
All right, 527-486-8166, KVNF now. I know something that you both have in common is a fig tree plant
oh.
going out there. So
oh,
what's
really?
Going on
okay.
with the fig tree?
Well,
yeah, tell me about your fig tree.
Well, some friends gave it to me, and it's grown about 2 feet. And I put it in the ground. It's not in a pot.
Oh, my gosh.
Did
it, has it made it through the winter yet?
This is its first year, so we're going to find out.
Uh-oh.
But
I don't know.
It doesn't really matter.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't, you know, we'll
it's
see.
A bonus.
It's
but
experiment.
It has a fig on it.
One fig. Yeah. Yeah, mine aren't very fruitful.
Uh-huh.
They're beautiful, and I enjoy them, but they're tough to get to fruit for me,
uh-huh.
but I've seen other people with figs. I know they do work, so I'm kind of waiting. It's like the almond tree. You wait 10 years, and finally it puts out fruit.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Or the boysenberry plant, finally, you know.
Is that a timing thing, or is it a...
Figs?
Yeah, what is that?
Well, I don't know what kind she has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be self-pollinating. So it's
oh.
not like I might have to, but it's not like I should need to. It should just
no,
do
well,
its thing.
Right,
you can't
right.
even see the flower because it's right underneath where the stem, where that leaf comes out.
Ah, yeah.
And it's in there. And there are certain varieties that need a type of wasp.
Uh-oh.
This tiny
ooh,
little
wasp
that digs in there and lays its eggs.
Oh, I wonder if we don't have those wasps.
Right.
No, we don't because we're not
oh.
a Mediterranean climate.
Well, gosh darn it. I've been waiting all these years.
But
what about a paintbrush?
Yeah.
I use a paintbrush.
No.
No. Darn.
But if you've had figs on it from time to time, then it doesn't need that wasp.
I haven't.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Well, we better
when they first brought
find that wasp. And...
When they first brought the fig trees into the Central Valley of California, and there was no figs. And the little... you know, Italians and Greeks and stuff, well, you need the wasp. And somehow or another, a shipment of trees came over from the Mediterranean
with
that
wasps?
Had wood wasps, and all of a sudden they had
sure.
figs.
Sure.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
An imported species.
Yeah.
That's imported and invasive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, we need more insects, I guess.
Yeah.
Make yeah.
those trees work.
You know, the bees are loving one of the things that's off the hook for me this year is my lavender.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they
just
love that lavender.
Crazy
mm-hmm.
right
uh-huh.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really good at just chopping that baby back this year on your recommendation,
oh.
Lance.
Oh, yeah.
And loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They make those cute little puffballs. It's just,
yeah.
They're beautiful plants
mm-hmm.
right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. Big bumblebees out there. Good
uh-huh.
stuff.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Amber.
Yeah. My pleasure.
How about, well, we have time for one quick call, so please ring us up, 527-486-8-1866, KVNF now. Pruning lilacs for Cynthia,
oh,
you wanted to talk about that last week.
Yeah, it's just these lilacs, forsythia, spireas, and I'm sure there's quite a few more, the flowering shrubs that are blooming on last year's growth. And so this is when you prune them, because if you prune in the spring, you prune off the flower.
Okay.
Right.
So this is when you prune, and the new growth that they develop after the pruning is going to be next year's bloom.
Oh, good tip.
Yeah. So this is when you do it. Lilacs, I technically like to prune all the stuff I'm going to prune out to the ground. And I thin it. And then you leave some old age, you leave some middle age, and you leave some young. And then if it needs to be lowered, I'll lower it after that. But I just don't top for lilacs.
Okay. So you're kind of getting in there and shaping it. Because
if you have nothing but old growth, it's not going to bloom as well. And young growth isn't going to bloom. It's the middle age that's going to bloom the best.
Okay.
On those. So you need a balance of all of it and stuff. And for forsythias, I just cut those to keep them out of my way.
Oh, yeah. Just trim them back.
Yeah, trim them back out of the way. They're in the hedge grove, and they're in the right along the side of the driveway and stuff. But they will re-sprout quite easily.
Okay.
So it's not, and you could even prune them to the ground if you want to. They're going to come right back.
I think at one show you described cutting it into like almost a fountain shape.
Yeah, right. Cut it so that it looks like it's a water fountain comes straight up and spilling over.
Yeah, sounds beautiful.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
The spirea is the same thing. You can cut some of the old wood out.
Okay, so good to do right now.
Yeah, it's good to do it. It's on your knees. gloves and the whole thing, just getting in there and doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what it's all about now, weeding cleaning.
Getting
down
on those knees.
And Amber, what about your garden? What are you hoping for after this small crisis?
I'm just hoping that some of the plants pull through and there's a decent harvest. When this happened before, I did make some notes that I did get some tomatoes and stuff. So,
you're good at journaling
I do try to keep
back.
Notes. But I do grow a lot of extra so that I can lose a lot because I have raccoons and deer and all sorts of things that get in there. So I try to grow more than I need so that when it does get hit, it's not such a blow where you don't have anything.
Right.
So, I don't know. It took years to recover from the last flood, and I might just rethink my whole layout, because if this is going to happen every 6 years, I can't do it.
Right.
Sometimes you got to have a reassess of what you're doing in your yard and be like, okay.
Can you plant choke cherries along the ditch bank?
Well, there's a lot of, brush there, but that is a good thought. I have some choke cherries I could transplant back there.
Just to
Slow down the water
barrier,
flow?
Slow it down.
Barrier, yeah.
I'm thinking more
the brush that comes in.
Kind of hold that up.
The silt's in the water no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the force of it might be lessened.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I just have to think that over still.
Well, good opportunity. You've got a good attitude for crisis.
Right now I do. I didn't earlier today, but I'm better now.
Okay. Well, good. And good luck with that, Amber.
Thank you.
Sorry to hear about that. And thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah.
Great to have you on the show.
My pleasure. I always like being a sit-in worm.
Right. All right. We'll be back next Tuesday again at 6:30, and lots going on in the garden, so send us your emails. And it's One Woman's Perspective coming up next, so thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns on KVNF.
Thanks. Okay. Bye.
Have a good evening.
I don't know who you took a shine to or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so. Low, little low, and low.